You're listening to Hear Arizona, addressing issues, empowering our community.
I've worked as a writer, a journalist, for most of my adult life. I'm 62, and I like to think I do what I can to stay current, not to be that old guy who's always talking about the good old days when things were different and therefore better. So I struggle with things like the topic of this podcast, something I find myself referring to as the death of cultural criticism. I don't want to be an old fogey about it, but it's not easy to watch as informed critical thinkers, people who make their living as expert voices on a particular topic, are replaced by people who are less interested in commentary and more interested in promoting their brand, whatever that may be. It wasn't that long ago that critics, people who did what I used to do for a living, were expected to know well the medium they were reviewing. We also needed to use our critical thinking skills to analyze what we were looking at with objectivity. Our editors relied on us to know which movie to see or which restaurant to eat at. We were expected to know whether the leading lady was properly cast and well directed, whether adding pancetta to carrot cake was a good idea. Readers put their faith in us knowing we'd been writing about this subject for a long while and looking to us to tell them whether they should buy the new Anne Tyler novel or not. The people who made the art or the food we were writing about counted on us to inform the community that they were there. This new steakhouse is open and not very good, I might have told people when I was a restaurant critic. Don't miss this new anthology, edited by Michael Thomas Ford, I might have said when I was a books critic. Don't go see Nearly Naked Theater's production of Night of the Iguana, I once said, back when I was a theater critic. And then I told you why. So did a lot of others. When I reviewed theater for the City Weekly, there were seven of us doing that job. Betty Webb from the Scottsdale Progress, Pauline Yearwood at the Jewish News, Chris Curcio and Kyle Lawson of the Arizona Republic, the Mesa Tribune's Max McQueen, Phoenix Gazette columnist Christopher McPherson. Later there was Michelle Hoffman and Carrie Lengel, both at the Republic. We were print journalists, which is to say we were a dying breed, though back then we didn't know it. Looking back, I wonder, did we really work as full-time critics? Did people actually care what we had to say? In the new world, most of us get headlines and opinions from social media. So are cultural critics necessary? And has anyone even noticed that most of us are gone? Phoenix New Times, the City Weekly, where for 30 years I wrote cultural criticism, publishes no theater, restaurant, or visual arts criticism today. Nor do the publications that make up the East Valley Tribune chain. The news isn't all bad. Bill Goodykoontz writes TV and movie criticism for the Arizona Republic, where Andy Berlin covers restaurants and Ed Masley reviews popular music.
My favorite albums, my favorite bands, I was introduced to by critics who were able to place them in a context that when I read it, I thought, oh, well, this is for me.
That's Ed. I asked him to talk to me about whether he thought critical thinking was dying.
I think there are critics out there with followings who are respected, who people will take a chance on a record because of their work. Yeah, I think they do exist. Hmm. I think it's getting harder to make a career out of it, right. You know? But I would think that if Ann Powers says that, like, a record is good, a lot of people are going to give that record a chance. It's going to be because of the way, A, because of her name, but B, because of the way she writes about it. Like, she's compelling, you know? She's
right.
She makes her points very well. And if you read something, it makes you want to give it consideration. I think there are writers out there who are like that.
These days, critics have gone the way of the 8-track tape and dial-up internet. We've been replaced mostly by bloggers who act as their own editors and are sometimes even involved in the industry they're reviewing, and by social media influencers, a new means of covering the arts that has very little to do with criticism. Restaurant owners pay influencers to rave about their food, while theater companies have taken to asking for online reviews from audience members. All of this blurs the line between this sort of faux criticism and the real thing. One by one, I've watched critical thinkers disappear from journalism, either because the paper they wrote for folded or their column got canceled because, well, arts coverage is always the first thing to go. The how and why of all this is old news. As we shift from print to online media, advertisers are spending less on traditional publications. As a result, publishers cut page counts and trim staffs. An industry that used to belong to arbiters and editors belongs today to accountants. A good accountant is concerned about money, not deep thinking about culture. They want more clicks, more page views, because these lead to revenue.
I think it enters into the decision-making process. I don't think it's the only factor. It's like a, I view reviewing the giant concert that's going to get a ton of page views as something that gives me leverage to write a few stories on local artists and smaller things that I think are important.
Right.
That like will be the underperforming nature of those stories will be less noticed because I can say, oh, look over there. Look at that. Look how many people read that thing about Sammy Hagar playing at Barrett Jackson. You know, that got, I want to say, a ton of page views. And so it made it very easy to experiment that week, that month, writing smaller stuff that might go nowhere.
On one hand, it's great that anyone who owns an iPhone can build an audience to whom they can express their feelings about books and movies and chimichangas. But should great cinematography be measured with likes and emojis? Should a stunning canvas be ranked by a critic who thinks pop art is maybe a kind of toaster pastry?
You know, when I like to tell people, especially on my page, a lot of people say like, oh, I love your food reviews. And a big thing I like to drive home is I don't really consider myself necessarily as a food reviewer. My job is I'm an awareness campaign.
Chelsea Hostin is an influencer. She has an Instagram page called Let Them Eat This. And she talks mostly about restaurants that she likes or cafes that she's been to that she thinks you should go to as well.
So my entire job is to tell you this place exists. And at the end all be all, everybody has different tastes, right? So like if I haven't had Moroccan cuisine before, who am I to say like, this is the best, I know everything, you don't know anything, because somebody who grew up in that culture is going to have a better take on that than I will. And so the way I look at it is like, hey, this is, you know, this, here's this Moroccan restaurant. This is what they offer. This is where it's located. If I really like something, I might be like, oh, I tried this. This was my favorite thing on the menu. But that's using my taste and talking about it. And I try to be fair when I do videos to say what I really liked or if I didn't like something. I'm like, oh, you know, you may want to just stick with drinks at this place. Their happy hour is pretty good.
We can't blame influencers. While the world shifted to social media as a news source, the interest in criticism was already waning. When my theater column was finally canceled a few years ago, it was canceled by a 23-year-old editor who announced that no one cared about theater anymore. He meant young people, of course. He was after clicks, but he must not have gotten them. He was fired not long after. By then, I'd found something else to write about. I I keep trying to convince myself that there must be something good about this move away from critical thinking and toward what amounts to paid PR flacks telling us what to like because they do. Because, I mean, what about those arts institutions that can't afford to pay an influencer to promote their product? Like an art gallery. Then again, what would that look like? An influencer promoting an art gallery or maybe a new exhibition at the Scottsdale Museum of Contemporary Art. Would they pose in front of a painting and tell you how much they enjoyed what they saw? I figured Herb Payne would have something to say about all this.
I think if you're of a generation that was used to the presence of thoughtful professional critics in the newspaper business, that you do miss it.
Herb is a theater critic for an online magazine called Broadway World. He reviews local plays and musicals.
It was great to have the ability to look to a Richard Nilsson or a Kyle Lawson or a Kerry Lengel on a regular basis because the newspaper gave those individuals credibility. They were trustworthy resources for providing a perspective on the theater. Now that's been replaced by what I would call the democratization of everything. You've got people now providing their opinions about theater without any perspective or knowledge about the art itself. Arts criticism has been abandoned in the name of the monetization of information by the newspapers. And I think that's led to an unfortunate demise in critical thinking about what people are watching, that kind of gratuitous standing O at the end of a performance that seems to be, what is it, a thoughtless gesture without really considering what happened here in the last 2 hours, you know?
Do you think anyone cares that what critics used to do with some, presumably with some expertise, has been replaced by that democratized voice, as you put it, that voice of the potentially uninformed?
I think they should care. I don't know that they do care. If they're now in the habit of relying on self-expression or relying on the marketing by the theater companies, they don't know what they're missing. And they may not care about what they're missing. It's like, if democracy is lost, would anyone notice? If the critic is lost, would anyone notice? That's why as a theater critic, I'm concerned not only about providing increased exposure and visibility to the art form, but to wanting to make it better. And gratuitous reviews by either audience members, which are posted on the theater company's website, or by those reviewers who feel their obligation is to the actor or the director, I think we've lost a great deal.
I wanted to know what the artists themselves thought about this shift in criticism. So I sat down with Ron May and Katie McFadden to get their take on this. Ron is an actor and the founder of Stray Cat Theater, one of our most popular local companies. Katie is an actor who these past 30 years has been an associate artist with Child's Play, a professional company of adults who make theater for children.
I think that there are theater patrons that miss reliable voices to turn to. I think there are people that miss a Sunday paper that had a voice, a professional critical voice that was talking about the arts so that they had something to engage with on a regular basis. So it depends. And it's also those for the most part. But I mean, everyone had their favorites, too, to where there were certain critics they would listen to and there are certain critics they wouldn't. And it's the same with any blogger or any Instagram, any influencer. There are those that you go, oh, okay, they like everything they see. But there were critics that were around. People said that about Kyle Lawson all the time. They were like, Kyle Lawson never hates anything. And I was like, I have categorical proof that's not true.
Well, let's talk about that because I've noticed that one way to fill that gap has been for theaters to ask the audience to post a review, presumably they're being vetted. And I hear a lot of griping about that sort of in general, both from your side of the story and mine. But I also feel like I get it, because where else are you going to get commentary?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it also gives the theaters an opportunity to mine the better comments and the more positive ones and the sound bites and the things they can put in their emails and on their social media. And I just for the heck of it, yesterday went onto Google reviews because I'm like, what are people actually asking their audiences to post things on things like Google and Yelp? And there's tons and tons of stuff out there, depending on the company. But most of them are things like, love the venue, love this company, love the work they do. They're not like real critical.
And they're usually not on a show-by-show basis.
Right.
I can say, speaking from personal experience, Stray Cat sort of lives or dies by our audience talking about our shows.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that we've sort of, the reason that Stray Cat sort of exists is we were like sushi at the beginning. It was like you tell people, I have this plate of raw fish, and you're like, that is disgusting. Why would I want that?
Mm-hmm.
But you sort of talk to people, here are the ways to enjoy it, and you can sort of not train, but you can teach people what's good about it and hopefully encourage them to try it, and then they come back. And it's the same thing with what we have been providing since Jump. We've had to sort of teach people, like, I promise you, you're not going to know the title. You're not going to know anything about the show, but you can trust that if you come and see the work, you're going to get something out of it. So having been around as long as we have an audience that is sort of like, we know how to interact with this material and we know how to talk about it. So they're sort of the best advocates for it because they're the ones that are seeking it out. So they're the best ones to say, and here's why I like it. That's usually what's missing in other reviews, is a sort of critical engagement with the work. Whereas we're lucky to have, yes, there are certain people that come and go, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. You're like, yeah, okay. But we've been really fortunate that we have people that engage, I think, on a more critical level than some critics do.
I think there's an accessibility factor, too. I think that sometimes some of those old school reviews don't feel very accessible to today's audience. I think there's also like an attention span thing, too. We have kind of a TikTok attention span now.
Yeah.
It's more palatable, I guess. I don't know.
The
shorter version as opposed to the long form.
Yeah. I think the feedback loop is shortened. Usually a critic, I mean, if you came and saw a show, we'd be lucky if we got a review out within a week.
Mm-hmm.
This is within 24 hours you get something. You can get something at intermission of a show, you know, which is great. And I think it's mm-hmm. important to have both voices. I think it's important to have the new voice that goes and sees the Glass Menagerie that's never seen it before, and they engage with it and respond to it because it's a new attack. And they go, I can tell you that from not knowing the Glass Menagerie, I really enjoyed it. Because they don't know they're not supposed to, because they weren't around 50 years ago when whoever did it on Broadway. But you have that critic also that's like, well, what you don't understand is that that's a terrible performance. She doesn't understand any of the nuance. She doesn't understand that because they're around and they saw a certain performance. And I think that those conversations are gone almost completely now.
Mm.
And I think they're vital to things. Because you also get to decide which one you want to listen to. I want to hear them all. I like hearing them all.
I'm still hopeful. There are some local critics still working here, writing critical essays that reach wider audiences. Nikki Buchanan continues to review restaurants for Phoenix Magazine. Herb Payne and Ed Masley still cover their music and theater beats. And arts writer Lynn Trimble has been publishing her work in Southwest Contemporary, a regional online publication where she writes about Arizona artists. Gil Benbrook reviews theater for PhoenixStages.com. Carrie Lengel, the former Arizona Republic theater critic, has launched a YouTube channel where he offers something called This Is Not a Review. It's a video series that promotes local theater arts. And I've been fortunate. Phoenix Magazine, the local city monthly, offered me an opinion column writing about local culture. And KJZZ, the local National Public Radio member station, continues to air my thoughts and opinions on the arts. I don't want to be sentimental about the bygone days of arts criticism. I keep reminding myself that the new generation of consumers, the new generation of readers, won't miss what they don't know. If you grow up on likes and page views and whatever's viral on Instagram, you're not going to miss Frank Rich's review of The Cherry Orchard in the New York Times, or what Jonathan Gold wrote about A Slice of Pie in the Los Angeles Times. Right? I'm doing my best to believe that.